Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find an see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. You ain't gonna be in there. But 51% of your prisoners will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Black won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. And I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economics. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control buildings and industry, and put that pulls in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 to 13 times for a lead. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folk got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations, who got the money? That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control and you take your money from the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor that is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk only control less than 35 thousandths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. So you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad-mouthing you. And O'Reilly, they can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisons in the United States are black people. You know you only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate. And that's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March, what? Who cares? Marching, they never changed anything.
All right, we got an open forum today, open mic. So anything you guys want to talk about, 619-768-2945. That's 619-768-2945. We were supposed to cover Moses Dixon yesterday, so we can pick up on that because we really didn't cover him yesterday. So when we're in a few more minutes, we'll cover that. But between that, we got to move a mountain or two.
many a young athlete entertains hoop dreams. Few, if any, have tried as hard to make them come true as the kid our Steve Hartman has gone to see.
Every week, he set himself up for disappointment. Every week, 13-year-old Jamarian Stiles came to this community center in Boca Raton, Florida, hoping to play basketball with the other kids. And every week, he was rejected.
They'll start picking teams, and I would be the only one left out. And then they'll just tell me, just go home and stuff. You can break someone's heart like that.
The problem was obvious to everyone but Jamarian. He lost his hands and most of his arms as an infant due to a rare bacterial infection. But he insisted that was no reason to give up his hoop dreams.
What about soccer? Have you heard of that sport?
Yeah, hear it every day.
Why don't you play soccer? That just seems like the obvious thing.
You would think that I would be good at soccer. I'm really not. I'm horrible.
Which is why, on the first day of class here at Eagles Landing Middle School, Jamarian took his case to basketball coach Darian Williams.
Yeah.
Said he wanted to be on the team this year.
I said, all great, well, just make sure you try out.
He said, okay, great, but what are you really thinking?
This man has no arms.
Yeah.
How is he going to play basketball? But, man, he told me, Mr. Williams, I've never been on a team before. Even if I don't play, I just want to be on the team. And how could I say no to that?
And that's how the Eagles got their first armless basketball player. Jamarian, number two there, quickly earned a reputation as the hardest worker on the squad.
He was usually the first one in the gym, usually the last one to leave.
Still, he sat on the bench most of the season.
Try one more.
Until last month. Coach put him in the game with about 6 minutes left. And when he eventually got the ball on the far side of the court, everyone yelled, shoot it! So he did. And sank. A three-pointer. And if you didn't quite see that, don't worry. Because shortly after, he got the ball again. This time on the near side. For another three-pointer. At the buzzer. Jamarian Stiles. The kid no one would pick. Was now everyone's hero. Needless to say, today, Jamarian can play all he wants at the community center. He just made the volleyball team and has every intention of playing football next year. Really, the only thing he won't play is the victim.
If I could wave a magic wand right now and give you your arms back, would you want them?
I don't need them.
You don't need them?
No.
Who needs hands when you've got this kind of touch?
Because I used to observe that a lot of those shacks used to be by the track where black people were.
With the room in the back.
Yes, with the room in the back. That was a safety net.
Yeah.
Where black people who would move here and there and go from here and there looking for jobs, that's usually why we move, and the jobs would play out like they always did.
And do.
But we had a place to go when the sun went down. But now, those shacks by the track don't exist anymore. They came and built highways right alongside of those railroad tracks where those shacks used to be. Super highways. So now, if you get on a highway, you might notice that sometimes you are right alongside of a railroad track. You see trains passing
that
as you're driving.
That is true.
Down a superhighway.
Mm-hmm.
Well, see, those highways used not to be there in the northwestern hemisphere. It used to be shacks along there. A lot of those shacks were on what we call railroad property. But the railroad people, the people that ran the railroads, didn't care much because nobody wanted to be down. That wasn't prime real estate.
No.
Nobody wanted to be by the tracks anyway. So black people used to build those shacks around there back when black people knew how to build shacks. Black people don't know how to build anything now because they used to build places for white people, but they cut them off with things called unions, took the carpentry all out of the schools and all like that. So how many black people do you know that know how to fix anything now? It used to be thousands and millions of black people that know how to build a house from scratch out of old pieces of lumber.
Wow.
A lot of people don't remember that. Most people are not that old to have seen it done.
Hmm.
coming along, I'm old enough to remember when many black people used to get together on a Saturday afternoon. That was the only time they had off, or sometimes, or on a Sunday sometimes after church. They would get together, six or eight of them, and go down and build what they call a shotgun house. It wasn't much, but it was a roof over your head, a good solid roof. I've been in some of those houses, raised up in some, all right? They were excellent, solid houses. They could stand a lot of storm and rain. They weren't much, just maybe three rooms. But I've been in some of them, and there were many, 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 many of them. But along came the white supremacists and say, these Negroes know how to build stuff. We're going to fix that so the next generation won't know how to do anything except stand in front of a place that is built and beg, because they won't know anything about carpentry or masonry or how to make anything with their hands.
All right. We're going to open up the phone lines a little bit early today. We'll be back in five minutes with that. And then I'm going to fill out, I know somebody that's got a, I call a math problem or arithmetic problem. What would you do if you were facing eviction? I know somebody that he got a notice yesterday for a court date today. So I'll go with my ideas. I'll give you some more of the backstory when we're back in 5 minutes, and we'll open up the phone lines. Anything you guys want to talk about, including any strategies with this guy I know that is facing eviction.
Now, learn this from Joel Osteen. That's my man. He be texting me. That's my man. This God done put some people around me, show me some stuff. He was telling this story. He said, this man that went to heaven, and he was walking with Peter down this aisleway, and it was going down this corridor, had a lot of doors on it, and said all these doors had names on it. And he said, Peter, let me ask you something. What's all these doors, these names on? He said, don't worry about it. Just go ahead. So he kept walking. He messed around. He saw one of them doors and had his name on it. He said, whoa. He said, hey, Peter, this here ain't got my name on it. Something I need to know? He said, man, don't worry about that. You here now. Just go on in there and talk to him. See what he's here. He said, nah, I want to know what's in the door. He said, you sure you want to see what's in the door? He said, yeah. So he opened up the door. It was a warehouse. It had nothing but shelves on it. And then the shelves had nothing but packages. And all the packages had his name on them. And he said, what is all these boxes? He said, that's all of the blessings, all of the things God wanted to ship to you. But number one, you didn't ask him for it. Then number two, you didn't believe you would have it. Then you doubted him. And then you felt like you wasn't worthy. And so now all these boxes is up here. Now the man standing there wishing he had never even been in the room. And I started thinking. I got some dudes that work for me. And I said, I want you to do this graph for me. And that's what I'm finna show you now. See, what you happen is, when God sends your package, he only sends it to one street. That's Faith Street. You got to stay in faith. You can't move off of Faith Street. You can't get on Doubted Drive. You can't be over there and start doubting it, because your package gonna go right on by. You can't lose your faith and get on Not Meant to Be Way, because your package is going to keep going right on by. Because the package just go to Faith Street. You can get your little feelings hurt, I ain't worthy. Guess what? Your package going to keep going right on by. You have not because you ask not. Then you sit up here and start feeling sorry for yourself. You go over on Pity Way, your package keep going right on by. If you stay right on Faith Street, don't ever come off, because the blessing is coming. If you wait on it, here it comes. It may not come when you want it, but it on time. But if you get up and you move off of Faith Street, your box gonna get sent back to sender. And now you're gonna have a warehouse with a bunch of boxes with your name on it that you didn't never get. And I don't know about you, but I want everything he got for me. If he got something for me, I need all of mine. Because I don't know about you, but God lay you out, man. God will give you stuff. Man, he done took me places. I ain't never thought I was going to go. I done seen parts of the world I never even thought I could go to. He done gave me stuff. He done put people in my life. God will do it for you, man. But you just got to stay, man. Use these principles of success. Understand, God is just that way. He'll lay you out. Because if he can lay me out, see, if he fix me and change me and get me over here trying to do better, I ain't perfect. I'm just trying to do better. I still say some stuff I ain't supposed to say. You understand? I ain't got it all together yet. I just got in the gate. I'm a new kind of Christian. But ain't no lock on my gate either. So if you see, once you check me, I'm probably going to check you back. But I'm getting better at that. I don't know how to love my enemies yet. I'm getting better at it, though. But it's a process. And the more times we can make people understand that it's a process, the more people can come in. And y'all people that have been good to me, that have been praying for me. I mean, man, my mama, if she could see me now, I just wish my mama could see me. Because she's been praying for this hill all her life. Watch my son. Well, he done watched me, mama. And I'm cool now. And my philosophy is very simple. I was who I was, but I am who I am. And I'm cool with both them people. Because who I was wasn't that bad cap. I made some mistakes, but I've been changed a little bit. And it's still a process. And the more people that you invite into the process, the better this is. Because ain't nobody perfect no how. So I really appreciate y'all, man, hearing me and listening to me. I'm going to ask Kirk Franklin if he will come.
Okay, I had to refresh my screen about 3 or 4 times. That's why it was a dead air there for a while. All right, so open trending topics today. Anything you guys want to talk about? We were supposed to cover, what's his name, Moses Dixon yesterday, so I'm going to put out some information on him momentarily. And I also have a friend of mine has a, he got a notice. The notice was dated October the 4th that he has a court date for today. He just got hold of it yesterday. And it's for an eviction hearing on where, you know, where he's at. So I'm going to throw out some of mine. He owes about $7,000 in back rent. So I'm going to throw out some suggestions on how I would tackle it. But if you got any suggestions, please feel free to chime in and I can pass along to him, 619-768-2945. Now, before we get to that, yesterday we did mention, what's his name, Moses Dixon. So and we really didn't get around to it. So let's go to Moses Dixon. Who was he? And I was made aware of him by one of our listeners. Thank you, Beasley, for that. All right, Moses Dixon. Okay, here's what I got. Born 1783. Son of Suki Dixon and Solomon Dixon. Let's see. Hold it. This isn't giving me the information I want. I want something more detailed. Okay, let's go with another one. Moses Dixon, 1824 to 1901, was an American abolitionist, soldier, chaplain and founder of the secretive Freedom Nights organization, which planned slave rebellions in the United States and helped enslaved African Americans break free via the Underground Railroad. He also founded the International Order of the 12 Knights and Daughters of Tabor for Black Self-Help, and was one of the co-founders of Lincoln University. Now, what I like about Moses Dixon so far, just by reading that one paragraph, is he was very proactive, it seems like. Not seems like he was. In other words, if there was no organization or institution or anybody solving this particular problem, then he came up with, he invented it himself, or partnered up with some people to do that. So once again, he's founder of the secretive, he saw that it was neat, so he founded the Freedom Nights organization, okay, which says it plans slave rebellions in the United States and helps slaves, African Americans, break free via the Underground Railroad. He also founded, he came up with a solution for the International Order of the 12 Knights and Daughters of Tabor for Black Self-Help. Notice it said Black Self-Help. It did not say government self-help. And he was one of the co-founders of Lincoln University. So he didn't wait around for a solution. He became part of the solution. Let's see. I'm multitasking while I'm doing this. All right, early life. Moses Dixon was born free in Cincinnati, Ohio, April 5th, 1824. His father, Robert, died when he was 8 years old, and his mother, Hannah, when he was about 14 years old. He had five sisters and three brothers. He trained as a barber in his teens. All right. At age 16, he began touring the South for 3 years, working as a traveling barber on steamships. I think that's, you know, you can probably, there are probably people out here doing that today. People that know how to do hair, but hair is a portable profession. So he had a portable profession. What he saw in his travels convinced him to work for the abolition of slavery. Freedom Nights and Slave Rebellion on August 12, 1846. Dixon met with 11 other young men on the second floor of an old brick house on the Green Street and 7th Street, whose names he later changed to Lucas Avenue, in St. Louis, Missouri, to develop a plan to end slavery in the United States. This guy had a large vision. Okay. They formed a secret organization known as the Freedom Knights that planned to start a national rebellion against slavery. Well, he didn't think small, I'll give him that. During an interview with the Denver Post on July 4, 1901, reprinted in the Minneapolis magazine, Dixon said of the organization, it was set up to organize slaves throughout the South, train them, and strike for freedom within 10 years of time. The men took an oath of secrecy, which reads, I may die, but I cannot reveal the name of any member until the slaves are free. At the end of the 10 years, these 12 men had grown into a resistance network of 42,000 men across the United States. It's amazing. He started with one, then he grew to 12, and from 12, he grew up to 42,000. Except for Texas and Mississippi, according to Dixon. These armed men met secretly at night and dug up for rebellion. The plan for insurgency was complete. Dixon told the Post reporter the troops were ordered to be stationed in Atlanta, Georgia, where we expected 200,000 men when we got to Atlanta. By July 1857, the men were ready to set it off. Dixon's orders were to leave the women and children, conditionally release noncombatants, treat prisoners well, and seize all ammunition. And he ordered them to advance, to fight, and to win, and to leave their bodies on the battlefield. The day of national rebellion was set, but before the time it began clear to its leaders that the relationship between the North and the South had become so tense that it was decided to postpone the rebellion. The Civil War was about to break out. Dixon decided there was more authority, and then let me, all right, that it cuts it off from there. All right, I'm trying to find more on Moses Dixon. That's all I'm finding so far. Oh, wait a minute. Let's see. There we go. Moses Dixon, black abolitionist, founder of, I'm waiting for it. Moses Dixon, black abolitionist, founder of the Knights of Liberty. Let's see if I can get some new information. I've read that before. Or in 1846, Dixon and 11 others sought to end slavery in the United States. Before I read that, the Knights of Liberty Network was later used in the Underground Railroad and small secret organizations. The Order of the 12 aided hundreds of slaves to freedom. Moses Dixon raised funds for the railroad and directly arranged for individual escape plans, including Henry Box Brown, shipped north in a wooden box. The Knights disbanded during the Civil War, and many of their members, including Dixon, joined the Union Army. With the end of the Civil War, Dixon focused on education and economic development among the freed people. Dixon became an ordained minister of the AME Church and grandmaster for the Prince Hall Masons in Missouri. With other returning black Union soldiers, he co-founded what is now Lincoln University. Additionally, Moses Dixon was the founding member of the Missouri Equal Rights League. Man, this dude was full of solutions. And served as president of the Refugee Relief Board, which aided 16,000 African-Americans from the South who ended up in St. Louis, Missouri. You see, Moses Dixon has a monument located in Crestwood, Missouri. Let's see, Dixon and his wife, Mary Elizabeth, had one daughter who died from typhoid fever in 1901 and is buried at the Father Dixon Cemetery in Missouri. Although Moses Dixon did most of his work to abolish slavery in Missouri, Ohio was a major player in the Underground Railroad. Of the estimated 100,000 slaves who escaped the South, boy, that's a lot of stories there. Nearly 40,000 are believed to have traveled through the Buckeye State, which is Ohio. Let's see. Okay, well, on the quick, that's what I've been able to dig up on Moses Dixon. I'm sure there's more. Well, here's another one, I think. Moses, I got to read. I don't want to get it mixed up with Harriet Tubman. No, that's Harriet Tubman. Okay. All right, well, interesting figure in history. Matter of fact, this guy might be more prolific than Harriet Tubman. You know, I don't know all the backstory on him yet, but he was definitely prolific. Okay, now let me go to my phone. Jesus, okay, wait a minute. I got to bring up a new studio. Okay. Moses. Oh, no. Blog Talk Radio. All right, so any comments on Moses Dixon? Man, it seems like St. Louis was a prominent stop on Underground Railroad. Okay, wait a minute. Episodes. Oh, no, I want that. I want studio. Okay, just be patient with me, folks. I'm waiting for the board to repopulate. Okay, here we go. All right. Phone lines here. 410 area code. Your mic is open. Okay.
Good morning, brother.
Oh, there you go. Okay, good morning.
Hotep to all of you, to you and all of your listeners out there in radio land. The person that you might want to bring into this conversation or either get with him on his knowledge is Brother Bianchi. He knows probably more than anybody about Moses Dixon. Because, you know, he was very active around the St. Louis and Missouri area. But the little bit that I've been able to glean, you say he might have been more prolific than Harriet Tubman?
Yeah, it's now he just from a little bit I read it this morning, and, of course, you made me be aware of him. Because Harriet Tubman, she only did so many I'm not trying to downplay what she did, but she did, I had to find her, but she didn't do, it wasn't a large number of people that she freed. That's where I'm trying to get to.
It wasn't, plus she didn't have the network that the Honorable Moses Dixon had. I mean, when you talk about 42,000 to 50,000 armed men and the network that they had outside of the core number of people that he had. I mean,
I got the figure. Harriet Tubman rescued 300 people on 19 trips. This guy dwarfed that
by thousands.
Right, but nobody talks about him.
Well, you know why. I mean, you don't have to be a rocket scientist to know why. Because, number one, he created an infrastructure. He had an organization. Plus, his strategy was to go in and capture the capital of the South, which was Atlanta. And the thing is, that type of information is a threat to white supremacy. I mean, when you look at what his plans were and what he was actually able to accomplish before, during, and after the Civil War, I mean, that's very dangerous information. And he didn't reveal a lot of the things that they did. But my thing is this. It's just like all you know about Martin Luther King is I Have a Dream. You don't hear about all the other stuff that he said or done. And it's the same thing with Moses Dixon. The elites of this country, the power elites of this country, will give you Harriet Tubman because Harriet Tubman wasn't a threat like this gentleman. So with that being the case, no, you aren't going to know anything about it unless you actually get out there and really dig. And there's two or three other Moses Dixons out there a lot of us don't know about, but his story is one of about four or five or six, seven other stories out there. Because what happened is nobody, including blacks, wants you to know that there was armed resistance against the institution of slavery. Nobody wants you to know that we can organize and we can do it very effectively. And those types of examples is very dangerous to white supremacy, whether you agree with it or not. And then when you look at it, not only did he free thousands, maybe tens of thousands or more, but the deal is after the Civil War, most of your black population in the state of Kansas can be attributed to this guy, can be credited to the Honorable Moses Dixon. So you don't want that type of information to get out, Brother L.A.
I guess not. You know, it's interesting you bring that up because when we talk about a slave revolt, one of the more known figures during Black History Month is they always bring up, somebody always brings up Nat Turner, which that was an epic fail. But why don't we know, well, we already said it. We know about Nat Turner and the epic fail, but we don't know about Moses Dixon. I didn't know about Moses Dixon. You told me about him a couple of days ago.
Well, the thing is this. They don't tell you about the armed insurrections by slaves that were successful.
No.
You know, Dr. Carr, that is a professor at Howard University, came up with a new term for plantations. He called them the prison industrial death camps, which they are and were. But the thing is this, Brother L.A., those people lived in fear of slave revolts because there were so many of them. Now, there's a book that documents 300 of them, but there's thousands of those slave revolts that happened during slavery. I forgot the what's his name? I forgot the name of the guy that wrote the book. But right here in North Carolina, he didn't include some of the slave revolts that happened here in North Carolina because there were so many of them. And I'm going to give you this, if you can think outside the box. And I know a lot of people is incapable of doing that. But why do you think there was a move to start the Civil War? Now, if you can think outside the box, what was the group that had the biggest population in the South?
The group?
And during slavery.
That would be plantation owners.
What was that plantation population consisting of?
You mean the individuals?
Yeah.
You had black. Go ahead, I'm listening.
I'm gonna send you the census dating all the way back to when they started it. That way, it might make sense to you. The biggest group, the biggest population group in the South was slaves. So when Moses Dixon was putting his stuff together, I mean, it wasn't a far-fetched plan or strategy to collect 200,000 men that was willing to fight and take over Atlanta, which was the nerve center of the South.
Okay.
And the thing is, I'm going to send that to you because, see, you got a lot of naysayers out there and a lot of people is not sophisticated enough to really look at information and really dissect it to the point that they can understand the meaning of what a person like Moses Dixon was capable of. And the thing is this, here's how powerful brainwashing is. Had he been really ambitious enough, his thing would have been, hey, let's wait until these people that's involved in the Civil War go in and decrease their numbers, then we'll wait and we'll strike. Had he done that, there'd be a different South today. But see, you know, we black folks, and I think I told you this earlier when we was talking about the Matrix, what, about a day or two ago. We don't have the backbone or the, we don't have the guts to go in and take control of something because we've been brainwashed to the point that, hey, we'll only go to a certain length and we won't cross that line. But had he and his followers just stayed back and waited until the Civil War was decided, then the South would be in black hands now. Now, you may not agree with it, and I know a lot of your listeners may not agree with it, but when I send you that census data, it'll make sense to you. But see, he put his trust in the white power structure that they do the right thing. And that's what we do today. And you and I know, I'm gonna just speak for myself. You can't put your trust in another person's ability to do for you what you can do for yourself. And that's where he made his mistake. That was a major blunder. And if you look at the Emancipation Proclamation was written and why the Civil War was started, and you look at the Constitution that broke off importing slavery, what? The Constitution said that no slaves from Africa was to come into this country, what, in after 1808, I believe it was. Well, what happened is those Northerners said, hey, you know what, them dumbass Southerners, if they keep bringing slaves in here, we are going to be able to control that slavery population with all of these uprisings going on down there. And you might want to look at, what's the lawyer name? Alton Maddox. See, when you look at the word emancipation, that means what? The transfer of property, doesn't it?
Right.
Well, Abraham Lincoln was saying, well, look, you know what? Hey, what, we might as well centralize this thing. You know, hey, the slaves ain't going nowhere. You know, we already got their minds. What we need to do is consolidate and centralize our efforts. We need to have men from the South and the North to go in and make sure we can control this population, but we can't do it if you guys down there study bringing in slaves and producing slaves and you don't have a sufficient enough army to go in and control the thing. So we might as well combine our forces. That's the mentality behind the Civil War, amongst other things. And the thing is, because we can't think outside the box, we think, and we know now that it was a lie, that the Civil War was fought to abolish slavery to a point. But the thing is, down South didn't have a standing army, I don't believe, did they, before the Civil War?
I don't know.
They didn't. They volunteered, didn't they?
That's where I heard it.
Yep.
Volunteered.
Yeah, they had to get the plantation owners and everybody had to get the plantation owners and get their overseers to fight that war. Well, the thing is, what happened after the Civil War was, hey, those forces were combined. And the thing is, had they not fought that Civil War, there might have been another Moses Dixon out there that said, well, hey, we can take this. Because, look, Denmark Vesey had, what, more men under arms and ready to revolt and take South Carolina than Moses Dixon did, didn't he? What, he had about 70,000 to 80,000 slaves ready to come in there, didn't he?
Yeah.
So with that being the case, when you can think outside the box, you can see why the Civil War was fought. Plus, I sent you a text about the Matrix. What happened is they were saying, hey, look, we got to keep this thing under control and we got to make sure that we centralize our efforts to keep these people under wraps. And basically that's what happened. But now they'll tell you that, hey, a whole lot of other things controlling the money and industry and everything else. But the biggest majority of the people that was down South, the population base was black folk. So what Moses Dixon was doing, he could have easily, if he had been thinking and not formed that blunder, it probably would have been a different United States today.
Well, Virginia, I'm reading here, Virginia, of all the southern states, sent more troops for the Confederacy. Georgia sent 120,000 soldiers, an estimate. Let's see. Despite the exceptions of slavery, Delaware, Kentucky, Maryland, and Missouri did not join the Confederacy. Although divided in their loyalties, a combination of political maneuvering, Union military pressure. Interesting.
Now, also think about this. How were those black soldiers for the Union, how were they so quick, how were they so quickly organized, blown up to 250,000 men? That's another thing you think about. See, because at Gettysburg, before Gettysburg, the South was kicking the North butt. So with that being the case, how were they able to get those men under arms so quickly? That's another thing that we don't take into consideration. You know, you're just going to get a bunch of black folks all of a sudden and they're soldiers. No, those people was already out there, ready to fight. And that turned the tide, didn't it? So, I mean, all you got to do is just think outside the box and get rid of this brainwashing that's been pumped in our heads and white folks' head too. But now your white thinkers, I bet you if you talk to them and they're willing to come out with that information, they'll tell you what was happening here. In fact, the girl that explained the Matrix in that link we have sent you, if you listen to her, all of this will make sense, and automatics, it'll make sense to you. But now, you know, you got some people that lack sophistication in their thinking that can't come up with a theory like I'm putting out there. But the Matrix as we know it today, and like you were explaining a couple of days ago, it wasn't in existence the way it is now. Now what Moses Dixon is proposing has to be done another way. And the thing is, if it's done wrong, you're going to see the annihilation of anybody, including the MAGAs out there, the Make America Great Again idiots. You're going to see a slaughter. But
okay,
I'm just telling
you
that.
Hold on, Beasley. We're going to take another call here. 413, your mic is open. I mean, not 413. Man, I'm saying everything wrong. 314, your mic is open. I was reading everything back.
10 o'clock, you going to go and be back in 5 minutes. And here is 1045.
And we still got plenty of time.
Yeah, but your callers might want to have to go do something. You got to
give
consideration to your callers that which
you
makes
are
your
absolutely
program
right.
Work.
You're absolutely
right. I mean, think
right.
About it.
Yeah, no, you're right.
Yeah, radio.
You're absolutely right.
And you said you were going to be talking about current events.
Or, I said open mic also, anything you guys want to talk about.
Yeah, 1860. And this
yeah, so we kicked it off with Moses Dixon, because I didn't cover it. Yes, it was supposed to, but so we kicked it off with that. But anything you want to talk about, we can talk about.
Well, them people were stealing property, man. That's what they were doing.
Now hold it. Now identify who the we is. Who were the people stealing property?
The slaves were property.
Oh yeah, they were considered property. You're right, personal property.
Yeah. So anybody that's like cattle rustlers, anybody that took them from one place from the owner to another was contributing in the whole adventure because the law was you were supposed to return them back to the owners. But that's all right. And wasn't no blacks going to take over the country? Did Mr. Dixon's people, did these slaves have weapons?
I don't know if it was Moses Dixon, but somebody I just read about within the last 40 hours was a blacksmith and did make weapons. I don't know if it was Moses Dixon, but somebody I read about, I can't.
What kind of weapons did they make as a backslid? Plowshares into swords. The slaves didn't have no weapons. And whatever tactics they learned it from whites. Think. Where else are they going to learn it from? Africans came here chunking spears.
All right, but by the time Moses Dixon came along, we're talking about blacks have been here for a few generations by the time he came along. So they were aware of guns. And I'm sure there were some black slaves that got a hold of guns.
Yeah, but who made the guns? And then who's making the ammunition? The Henry repeating rifle came along in the 1860s.
There were black slave blacksmiths who did know how to make weapons. They did exist.
Yeah, but that
now
but,
how many of them were? I don't know.
Well, the Henry has machine parts. La, do you know what a blacksmith doesn't make machine parts?
Oh, we were talking about that. Well, you know what? Hold on. Beasley, can you answer that question? Because I'm not up on it.
I can tell.
If Brother Black Piazza
Mills did not make machine parts.
Okay, Beasley, your comment.
Excuse me, Brother Piazza, but I'm going to send Brother L.A. some more information on Moses Dixon. He was able to gather funds, and he was able to go in and buy weapons from London, from England. They had weapons. And look, what weapons they didn't have when they raided these different places, they were able to get guns just like we did in guerrilla warfare when I was in Vietnam. So it's not, I mean, you gotta be able to come out with sophisticated
things. You think he bought them from England? He bought them from England.
They were smuggled in.
All right. Well, where did they get the ammunition from? If he had 200,000 men, you ain't going to smuggle no 200,000 weapons into the country.
He started
then
with
47,000. Then where are you going to get the ammunition from?
And by raiding all of those places that I just told you. Look, we were taught to live off the land and go in and secure the weapons that we needed through raids. Now, that's not bought out.
Living off of the land, potatoes and cabbage. Repeating rifles don't come out the ground.
Well, they didn't have repeating rifles.
Think about these things. They
didn't have repeating rifles. They had flintlock weapons. But now, I'm telling you now, we were taught to go in and secure weapons any kind of way we could. And the thing is,
let's say they had flintlock.
We confiscated weapons.
Let's say that they had flintlocks. Even the Indians had Henry 16 shot repeating rifles at the Battle of the Little Bighorn, where they defeated Custer.
What year was that?
They defeated General Custer, who was a Confederate general. He went out into the West and he got defeated by the Sioux. That was after the Civil War.
What year was that?
It was after the Civil War. In the Civil War, the Union troops had about 1,700 repeating rifles that the soldiers themselves bought with their own money. The Confederate soldiers bought with their own money repeating rifles also.
How many?
The Union soldiers had less than 2,000 that the soldiers themselves bought.
How many did the Confederate soldiers have?
They had, I don't know how many they had numerized, but you're saying that Moses Dixon and them had flintlocks. Flintlocks is a process to fire, load, and fire. Repeating rifles, the repeating rifles held 16 shells. You had a Confederate general that made a remark about that, saying that them Union soldiers had guns that you could load on Sunday and fire all week long.
Now I ask you, how many repeater rifles did the Confederate soldiers have? I ask you a question.
They don't know how many they had because the soldiers themselves were buying.
Okay, if you don't know how many, then that's a mute point. All I'm telling you is that
the Negroes didn't have no rifles. They had flintlocks.
It's not too far-fetched of an idea that smuggling, we know smuggling went on. Number two, there were somebodies, more than one. There were probably many arms dealers that would sell to anybody who had the funds they needed.
The Union had about 7,000 rifles, come to think of it.
Yeah, so I'm sure Moses Dixon and his people got arms just like the Native Americans by any means necessary. Smuggling,
here's the point.
Alcohol, whatever.
I hear what you're saying, L.A., but here we are looking back. They got their ass kicked.
No, they did not.
Because we know what we live under today. I mean, just think about it. Just like the Zulu, they got their ass kicked. Zulu raised hell with other adjoining tribes and other adjoining tribes. But even when the Zulu went into Zambia and ran up against the Bemba, they got their ass kicked. Another African tribe. They got their butt kicked. They got their butt kicked with the British. Here's a Zulu rubbing some type of concoction on their body saying that it's going to stop bullets. Yeah, right. I'm saying.
Okay, all right. Hold on, Piyaki. All right. Beasley, your reply to the Union won. Now, your response to that, Beasley.
That's that woulda, shoulda, coulda stuff.
Beasley, you there?
Yeah, I'm here. I'm listening because... It's the music.
You got the floor. You got the floor.
Yeah. Well, look, those 42 men, if you read what Moses Dixon said, he said they carried out raids and everything else. I'm going to send you some more literature on this because the thing is, whenever they went into, they did these little clandestine operations, they were able to gather guns and ammunition and everything else. Not only that, I just told you, that Moses Dixon had supplies coming in from England where he was given money to go in and arm these people. Now, the other thing is this. They didn't get their butt kicked. They went in and joined the Union Army to fight the Confederates. So now the thing is they got their butt kicked. That is not true. And the other thing is this.
I did read off of Wikipedia this morning. Now, Beasley's right on that. A lot of black slaves went to the Union side and fought for the Union. And that's a fact.
You're right. You know why come they did that?
They ended up on the winning side.
So what was they considered when they went to the Union side?
You tell us.
They were contraband.
No, they weren't. They were
contraband. That's why come those were the ones that Lincoln freed because they was contraband. That's the only ones he could free. He didn't free the rest.
You're right. Absolutely. You're absolutely right. And the thing is, they crossed enemy lines to get to Union lines so that they could fight. So now, I mean, what you're saying is really poppycock.
Well, wait a minute. Blacks fought with the Confederate too, right?
They did. Some of them did.
Blacks did fight with the Confederacy.
I got a question to ask. Beasley now, and I've stated this on here before, there were at least 4,000 black folk that were slave owners. Most of those black slave owners were in the South. Now, many of them, some of those were relatives and whatnot. But I imagine if you're a black slave owner in Mississippi or Georgia or whatever, and you got a $4,000 acre plantation, you're fighting, put it this way, I'm putting myself, if I own the plantation, okay, I'm fighting for my right to keep intact my enterprise. Well, I'm sure you had some blacks on it that were fighting on the Confederate side trying to preserve what they already had built up. I'm just putting that out there.
Brother L.A., Brother Piyaki, you know what? Them crackers down south was dumb. But they wasn't dumb enough to put armed rifles and weapons in the arms of slaves on their plantation. Now, that's just not true.
Blacks fought for the Confederate army just like blacks fought in Hitler's Wolf Whopper. Come on now. Here's another point too. You talk about about those weapons. The Henry rifle, you couldn't put a bayonet on it for close battle. That's why come it was so treacherous at the time. Yeah, I mean it was like a monster. That's exactly what it was.
So you say that
he was supplied weapons from Europe. They were selling them defective weapons. And there's a member of the Ball family, B-A-L-L, and I listened to him in an interview. It was either on Tony Brown's Journal or it was on that other, Like It Is. Lister Felt Melton, and he talked about how they sold defective weapons that didn't work. They sold them to Africans even.
To who? Who did the Ball family sell those defective weapons to?
They sold them to African tribes because African tribes wanted to have weapons like that. Even the women.
What year was that?
Even them damn women, it had to be in 1800 because that's when they started making weapons like that.
Is that the same Ball from Ball State University, that family?
It might be. I don't know for sure.
Okay.
What year was they selling defective weapons to the African tribes?
Well, you have to look at the time frame. What time frame is that movie based on? About the Dahomey Amazon.
That's
the 1800s.
You raised the point, but you won't tell me what you...
I said the goddamn 1800s.
What 1800s?
Flip a coin.
That's why come you can't get in.
They didn't have no repeating rifles in the 1700s.
They had very few in the 1800s.
They did not. Henry started manufacturing repeating rifles in the mid 1800s. That's why the Union troop had close to 7,000 of them. Actually, by 1866, there was over 14,000 units had been manufactured.
To supply how many men?
So what is it going to, if you manufacture 14,000, would that like be one per man?
No. If you're talking about 250,000 troops, no. It wouldn't be one per man.
Well, they was continuing. You know, when you make a bunch, you distribute them, don't you? How do you do with biscuits? If you go feed 5,000 people, do you take you first produce 5,000 biscuits that's going to get cold, or you distribute them as you make them? That's why come the stuff don't work. You don't understand the logistics and how to get things done.
That's why I'm asking you these questions, because I do. I was in a logistics unit in Vietnam. That's why I'm
You was in American ran, made control. Them people back then didn't have that type of infrastructure. Them damn slaves couldn't make nothing. I mean, give them something, they would figure out how to use it. Yes, but how do you resupply? You know, you can even go back to ancient Egypt. One of the things that Ramesses had when he fought the Hittites, he had a supply line coming all the way from Egypt all the way over to Turkey.
Exactly.
You got to be able to supply your troops.
Exactly. And look, you know what I said earlier? And look, you've never been in the military, have you?
No, I was too smart to go to the military.
Right, or either too scared. But anyway, what I'm saying is this. When we were out in the field, and I said this earlier, but you don't understand this. We were taught, number one, to secure our supplies and to gather weapons whenever we need raids.
Where
and
your
the thing
supplies
is,
come from?
We were taught to go in and supply ourselves out of whatever materials we needed from the raids that we conducted. And the thing is, you're telling me that black slaves didn't have the mentality to create strategies and to go ahead on and secure their weaponry and food and everything from those plantations that they're raiding. That's what you're telling me.
John Brown tried to get Frederick Douglass to go along with his plan, right? I would imagine Frederick Douglass asked Brown these same damn questions. That's why he said he ain't going to have nothing to do with it. And even Harriet Tubman said she ain't going to have nothing to do with it.
And look, read that part in there, Brother L.A., where Moses Dixon told John Brown, you need to wait. Don't do it now. Hold off. And look, if you listen to what Brother L.A. said, it took him 10 years to go ahead on and formulate this plan. And the plan was to go into motion after they had secured what they needed. So now you weren't listening, or either you weren't on the line when he read what he read.
Why come they didn't do it? Why come it ain't that way today?
Because there are more sophisticated ways to do things.
Wait a minute. Why come the reality today is not that of a Moses Dixon?
It is. You're right. That's something we agree on. And you know what? There can be a strategy to do exactly what you ask. But the thing is, it's not to be discussed over these airwaves. Yes, it is.
Let me tell you something. If you had a plan that you're going to take over the United States, you're going to fight me.
Someone has already taken over the United States.
No, we talking about you.
Oh, no, forget about me. You asked me a question. If somebody has a plan about taking over,
you can't even take over your damn neighborhood.
You want to bet? But anyway,
you talk about all the time about these immigrants that's taking over your stores where they feed you. So you're going to be out there fighting. After you get through fighting, you're going to go home, and you're going to go to the immigrant store to buy food to fix dinner.
You asked me a question. I gave you an answer. Now, you may not like
it. I'm telling you how it's going to work out.
Someone has already conquered America, and you know it, and I know it, because you're smart enough to figure this out.
All right, but if they have conquered America, who's at the bottom of the list got kicked over first?
Black folk.
You're damn right. So there ain't no issue. You know, I'm going to tell you something else, too. Black people, I hear black voices talking about the court decision that reversed Roe versus Wade, saying that a woman, and they saying, well, a woman got a right to, you know what somebody told them? They said, look, and I said the same thing. I don't care how many black babies black women abort. They can abort each and every last one of them, apparently, like they done. All we want them to do is abide by the law. Nobody trying to stop you from killing your black babies. Kill them all.
The
you know what
decision,
they didn't say the, nothing else because the reality decision, came to them.
The best decision that this court made was to abolish Roe versus Wade because you know why?
No, I don't think. Well, it,
black folks win. Black folks win.
How do they win?
Because number one, these black girls can't get free abortions in these clinics. They got to have. They got to produce these babies, and if we produce more babies than
no,
that makes
they,
us.
They can get. They can get abortions, Beasley, because some states allow abortion. Matter of fact, Planned Parenthood has got mobile units to pull up in front of your house. You come out the house, get in the unit, get your abortion, go on back in the house.
That's right, but the majority of them are not going to go through with this because, look, if there's one thing we black folks do, we do obey the law when white folks put it out there. So now, we win. I'm like you. I was against abortion from the get-go once I found out what happened. I've been against abortion because if we had if abortion hadn't been put in play in Planned Parenthood, our population would be somewhere close to about 107,000 people right now. Black.
It would be about 60. But no, you live in Atlanta, right? No, you live in South Carolina. Blacks in Atlanta voted for Warnock, and he publishes his stance. He's for abortion through the ninth month. This black preacher that they voted for. So here's the point.
I'm against him.
I understand what you are, but you just one vote and you don't live in Georgia. But here's the point. The thing is so jacked up. It is so jacked up that you wonder how many different black factions are you dealing with?
Quite a few. But I'm just telling
you
now.
That means there's not going to be any unity if you're dealing with quite a few. Because you got people that's black that will support a candidate that's pro-abortion through the ninth month. Then you got those that say we need to come together. Then you got those who say we need to have critical. It's crazy.
It is. But now, look, you're from St. Louis. You know about Moses Dixon. I mean, he's a legend in St. Louis. So you know more about him than we do.
He's not no legend in St. Louis.
Well, he should be if he's not. But you know about him. But here's the thing. Brother L.A. said he started with an idea. He got 11 other men. And what happened is those 11 men ballooned out to 47,000 men. And the thing is, they were recruiting others. And the thing is this. You know what? You read the Bible. You're a Bible scholar and a historian. And the thing is, Jesus said, those that don't receive your message, you brush the dust off your sandals and you move on to somewhere else. See, Brother Pianchi, we ain't got time to
listen. You're absolutely right on that.
Look, we ain't got time to wait for naysayers and negative thinking people. You go with what you got. That's what you do. Now, if you wait for a whole bunch, you ain't going to do nothing. We ain't going to do nothing. But the thing is, you don't want everybody. And this 320
million. It's too late then, Beasley. It's too late then.
Answer my question.
It's too late. Do you know why?
It ain't never too late.
The one that you tried to convince to the point where you brushed off your shoes and went on, they going to tell on you.
Right. And you deal with them.
You can't deal with them. You've moved on.
Brother Pianchi, answer me this question. Out of 320 million people that's populating the United States, how many of them are in the military?
About a million.
I'd say about two something. But anyway, you don't need a whole lot of people to do what you need to do. That's the point I'm making. You get those that you...
But wait a minute. Who is them 2 million fighting against?
They're fighting against enemies within and outside the borders of the United States.
Right. They're not fighting against American citizens who damn near everyone got guns.
That's right. Exactly. And the thing is this. That's why some MAGA, the MAGA's Make American Great Again crowd is so dangerous. Because they got
more
guns than the
guns. No, that's not true. You have to look at what they asked for. They asked for the Constitution to be followed. They asked for the laws to be followed.
Exactly. Exactly. And you know what? When the message is out there and the message is clear, like Donald Trump put it out there, you don't get everybody, nor do you want everybody, but that select few that hears and understands your message, that's what you work with. And blacks can do the same thing. So those factions you're talking about.
Wait a minute. When Donald Trump is talking, he's talking to and being listened by blacks too.
Okay. You're making
my
point.
You got blacks that stand behind Donald Trump.
And I'm one of them. I'm one of them. I'm a follower of Donald Trump. I love Donald Trump because of what he says. Because, see, he's doing things in the black man's interest, in the black woman's interest. That's why I follow him. I don't know why
he's
you follow him.
He's doing things for the interest of United States citizens that abide by the U.S. Constitution.
And you know what? He's strengthening the American black man and black woman because, hey, whatever he's preaching is to our advantage.
Just like the meeting I'm going to attend about 6 o'clock this afternoon, this evening, is on the issue of curtailing that damn federal government like it's supposed to be.
Well, you know what? I'm with you. Because you know what? I feel the same way you do. Maybe from a different angle. But see, that's, Brother L.A., that's one way to destroy the matrix, what he just said. And when you do, and your crowd do, I'm going to be on the sidelines with my Pepsi Cola and my popcorn cheering you on.
Well, it's going to be either this. See, people try to do things the way it's prescribed, petition, protest, demonstrate. Well, then if that don't work, then it's just like the old proverbial cornered fox. When you stand between it and freedom, they become a vicious weapon. And that's what's going to happen. States are going to draw their lines.
I hope they do. And look, Brother L.A., I want you to listen to this. And listen to what your brother just said. I want you to listen. I said earlier, Moses Dixon made a blunder. See, he made his move too soon. And what your brother just told me is, hey, all you do patiently is just sit by and let the dust settle. Then you make your move. But go ahead on, brother. I'm with you. And look, if you need some money or you need whatever you need, you let me know, and I'm going to support you and your crowd. Because, see, I'm with you. I'm with you. So you let me know.
Moses Dixon, like, what's that other guy over in Tulsa? That was a smart man, too. He had intuition. Everybody don't have that. He had to learn that from somebody. And that man was a mulatto. He was not no straight off the boat from Africa. The people coming from Africa, the people in Africa was not doing those things. So how would they have to learn? Just like you got the guy that talked about the ones that about a railroad, about a shack, whatever, Neely Fuller. Neely Fuller learned. They didn't take no carpentry out of school. Blacks can have whatever the hell they want in the schools.
That's not true.
Yes, they can. That's they had not it here true. In St. Louis. They had a construction training school here in St. Louis. Nobody sent their kids to it.
Did they have it in public schools?
They had it in public schools. Well, I ain't going to say it was in public schools. It was a charter school.
Well, there.
And I know the people that ran it. Matter of fact, they wanted me to come teach.
I know in D.C., at Phelps, I don't know if they got now Phelps Career Center or Vocational School, they had, well, here's the problem. They have problems hiring somebody to come fill a lot of those building trade professions, as a teacher, because they weren't paying them enough. And most of the teachers that they did have were basically retired people.
Correct.
Now, I don't know if they've done better since then. And then you also got to remember Job Corps is prevalent across the United States as well. We learn the trade.
That's true.
Well, construction trades got their own schools. They have their own programs. If you come out of Job Corps, you still go through their program. If you come out of a high school, you still go. See, you don't come out of high school and go directly into the unionized trade. You go through their program.
That's right. That's right. You're exactly right. And look, while you're talking this now, and I told Brother L.A. this, and you probably heard it too in a prior show, Baltimore had trade schools. You could go to a technical school where you learn the liberal arts, or you could go to a trade school and come out with a trade. And it was on Edmondson Avenue and a couple of other locations in Baltimore. The unions in Baltimore petitioned the state, and they petitioned the city council to do away with those trade schools because the young men were coming out fully trained in their trades. And the thing is, they took them out of them schools. Now, if you want proof, I can get it for you. Now, the union has something to do with it over in Baltimore in the East Coast. Now, I don't know what they did in St. Louis, but there was a ton of young men that was going to those classes, and the union petitioned both the state and the city council to do away with those schools. So now, I don't know what happened with you.
Why did the people let it happen? Baltimore was black, wasn't it?
Not back. Yeah, they were black back then, but it's like anything else. Hey, the power that black folks have is an illusion. Now,
well,
you
it's
know
not
that
an illusion, Beasley. It's not an illusion. Well, it may be to them. Maybe they're looking at it through some rose-colored glasses. But blacks run these school districts. They can have whatever the hell they want.
If you're controlled by an outside entity in which Baltimore City Council is, they're going to go along with their benefactors, their suppliers, and their donors. And the thing is, that black city council is just as white as white folk out in the counties.
Well, you know, St. Louis City Council don't have nothing to do with the schools. The schools are a separate entity, a school district. The mayor don't have no control over the schools. I don't know about Baltimore.
Where did they get the money from?
Money comes from the state.
Thank you.
And the local,
okay, I read.
And money comes from the state. The money comes from the state and also the local concerns.
That's my case.
And then if you engage in some federal, but they don't run it. The daily operations of the school district in Missouri is by way of the board, which is the people.
And who supplies the funds to those boards?
You got people that supply, people contribute to it that don't even have kids.
Answer
you got people
question.
That contribute to it that rent.
Where do they get the majority of their funds from?
Yeah, but the thing is that what the law says. The majority of the money in Clayton, LaDue, 90-some-odd percent come from the local people themselves. They get very little from the state and hardly nothing from the federal government.
I ask you a question. The state supplies the school boards, right? You said that out of your mouth. You said that. So now, where is the power of black folk when the state has the purse?
The local district provides over 90% of the funding.
And how much is that? You tell me.
90%.
You tell me.
If it's $100, they supply $90. If it's $10,000, they supply $9,000. 90%.
And it runs the whole school district.
No, I just run two windows and a door.
Thank you. You made my point. You made my point. But
if you
want to
take that, it runs two windows and a door.
You made my point.
Do you understand percentages? L.A., do you understand percentages?
I damn sure do.
If 90% of the operational budget comes from the local concern, who has the control over the damn budget?
The local concern.
Thank you.
I bet you if we sit down and you get the figures, show me in L.A. the figures on how much a school district provides for those local schools. That's all
I've
I want you to
LA,
do.
I've emailed that to L.A. It was produced by, it was published in a paper called the Post Dispatch, which made it easy. It listed all the school districts, and it showed their percentage of funding and where it come from. I'll email it to you again.
How much total? That's all I want to know. Because if that's the case, then, hey, they don't need state money. They don't need – why would they need state
money? They're not going to turn it down. They never turn it down.
They can, but the thing is they're always petitioning the state to build new schools.
And the city of St. Louis is about 35%. City of St. Louis Public School District at one time was $350 million. Detroit was over a billion. Now, I don't know what the percentage to break down. But what I'm saying is that the state statute says that that control belongs to the local district, not the state board of education, nor the Department of Elementary Education can mandate nothing to that school district. That's what the law says.
Control is one thing, but money is another. And look, all I want you to do is go and get the money that is allotted to those schools and show me how much comes from the state and how much is comes from local tax.
How much comes from the state.
That's all I want to know. You show me. I'm from Missouri, too. You got to show me.
35% in Missouri in the schools in the St. Louis Public School District, about 35% come from the state through a process of formula. Because they used to complain that the property in the out rural areas was worth more, better shape than that in the city. So they came up with a formula in order to equalize it.
Show me the money. I'm from Missouri. Show me. Show me how much the state provides for each school district and show me how much from taxes, local taxes, supports those school districts. That's all I want to know. That should be a simple task for you. I see you getting out the paperwork.
I've shown you this before.
You haven't shown me anything.
I don't show you anything. You're right, I don't. It's because I figure it's a waste of time.
See, when I make a statement, I show you the information and LA can send it to you. All you gotta do is send it to LA and send it to me. That's all. See, if you call me a liar, I'm gonna make sure I can prove my point. And especially if a school district is in a rural area because you got less people. Yeah, you got more money out there in property. But the thing is, ain't nowhere in the world. And look, you know what? I'm going to pay you for your time. The thing is this. if they could provide 90% of the funds to support their school district and the operation of it, they don't need that 10% coming from the state. And knowing them, if they're providing all of that, they create a private school so the state wouldn't have any control over the school district.
Mm. Ellie?
I'm listening.
I'm getting ready to send this to you. How much do St. Louis areas really spend?
I want to know about that Clayton. County you talk about.
Wait a minute. Hold on. Clayton, like I said, percent of funding from local sources, 95.54%. That tells it all.
And it equates out to how many dollars?
St. Louis, whatever it is, if it's $1, that's where it comes from. Damn, do you understand how percentages are used?
Yes, sir.
And y'all talking about forming a damn nation? God damn.
I didn't say forming a nation.
It don't have to be it doesn't have to be a dollar amount. It's percentages. Think. Do you understand what I'm saying on that grounds, L.A.?
He who has the goal makes the rules.
That's right.
We're talking about percentages. Percentages.
If they got 95%, we know who makes the rules.
That's right. Who makes the rules?
It ain't who makes the rules. The law, the state legislature makes the rules. There it is, L.A. Go to your email box.
Okay, I'm going in now.
I owe you an apology, Bianchi.
You don't owe me no apology. I'll be trying to snooze up.
Oh, God. The next time I do a job, I'm going to tell the man, don't pay me off total money. Just pay me off in percentages. Don't worry about the dollars.
Wouldn't the percentages do translate into dollars though?
It all depends.
Did you get the email, LA?
No, no, yeah. I'm refreshing my thing.
Yeah, get the email.
See, here's another thing. If you're gonna run a technological program with me, you gotta have modern equipment, man.
I'm on modern equipment. It hasn't come through yet.
I can't be going back to Windows XP stuff and Vista.
LA, just get the information.
It'll be easier if he emailed it directly to you. It'll be easier that way.
I don't want to do that. Here's the thing right here.
I don't want him to have access to any of my communications. I'd rather it go through you.
I'm an FBI agent. I already got that. But, L.A., what this do tell you is that black districts have more money per child than white districts.
Oh, yeah? In St. Louis.
Black districts have more money per child per student than white districts, what we would call white districts. Of course, now since blacks have ran from the city and moved into these districts, well, that you can't say they all white now, but you get the picture. You get it, L.A.? It's called spending.
I'm waiting for it to come through.
But damn, man, it should have been there by now.
The email's supposed to travel at 2,000 miles a second. And I haven't refreshed it. It hasn't got here yet. And I got updated software, so that's not the problem.
I don't understand some of these discussions that people be putting on. I really don't.
I really don't either. You know what? It blows my mind that some people can come up with things and they'll swear by it.
I was telling some people Sunday, about East St. Louis Public Schools, where the math proficiency is less than 1%. Then you know what that person said? Well, we had students in the East St. Louis High School had X number of $1 million worth of scholarship. I said, that don't mean a damn thing. It means that when they're checked on their proficiency, less than 1% is where they should be. These dumbass fools. Then they blame, then they talk about historical black colleges. Well, them kids go to, that's where they're going to go. They're going to go to historical black colleges. They're not going to be going to a traditional white college, per se, a traditional college, because they can't cover, they can't carry the water. They can't cut the mustard. So there you are.
I got a question about, this is slightly off topic, I got a question about HBCUs. Can anyone get into a HBCU?
Some of them are very hard to get in.
It doesn't matter what your SAT scores were or nothing. If you want to get in, now you might not be able to get out, but can anybody get in a HBCU?
I had another fool say that testing ain't important.
Answer the question.
A coach. I don't know, L.A. You know, that is, it's more than this. Here's another one I sent you. It's the law on the it's Missouri State statutes on curriculums. And who run the district?
All right. Now, I got that one. I got it right now, law.
You got the law? Read it.
Yeah, I got the law. Just got it. Title 11, Education Libraries, Chapter 160. Curriculum, textbooks, and other instructional materials not to be mandated by the State Board of Department. Exceptions, appendix to the Common Core standards not to be required. And then it's got quite a bit. Oh, well, it's not,
well, go
that's
ahead,
not really
reading.
Long. Okay,
read,
wait a
read
minute.
The rest.
Okay, hold on. Let's see. The Department of Elementary and Secondary Education shall not be authorized to mandate and are expressly prohibited from mandating the curriculum, textbooks, or other instructional materials to be used in public schools. Each local school board shall be responsible for the approval and adoption of curriculum based on the school district. The provisions of this subsection shall not apply to schools and instructional programs administered by the State Board of Education and the Department of Elementary and Secondary Education, or to school districts that are classified as unaccredited. Two, the State Board of Education and the Department of Elementary and Secondary Education shall not require districts to use any appendix to the Common Core State Standard.
All right. That's the law. The local school district is who? The people. In black areas, it's the people. Now, the one I just sent you again, spending, I sent it to you one time, I just sent you it to you again. The title of the subject is spending. Open that one up.
All right, I'm on it right now. Okay. And I click on I'm clicking on it. Okay, how much do St. Louis area schools really spend? All right, this is if you've been listening to the St. Louis Public Radio.
Open up the graph. Open up the spreadsheet. The spreadsheet has a district name. It has the tax rate ceiling. It has the percent of funding from local sources. Oh,
okay, okay. All right, all right. Well, they got it broken down by county, like Clayton, the Clayton district.
What's the percentage of local funding from Clayton?
95%, 95.54%.
Come down to Brentwood. What's Brentwood?
Brentwood is 95.62%.
What's the city of St. Louis?
City of St. Louis, which is 63.22%.
Come down to Maplewood, Richmond Heights, which is black. What is the percentage?
87.99.
All right, go down to Hancock Place, which is white. What's the percentage?
Hancock Place, 55.9%.
Your black school districts have more money per child than the white ones do. Go down to Bayless. That's white. Melville is white. Bayless is 56%.
Yeah,
but when it comes
56.
Down
23%.
To the academic performance, they outperform these black districts.
Let me ask you a question, because the thing is this. Who provides that money to those school districts?
Oh, shit, man. Local L.A., tell him where the money comes from. What does it say? Percentage of funding from local sources. Taxation in the local sources.
Beasley, I just copied and pasted to you. I texted it to you. Read, which sees a break. So you got that now in your text.
Yeah, so he's saying that 67% of the funding for St. Louis schools comes from the local tax base. Is that what he's saying?
It comes from St. Louis, Beasley. St. Louis.
The city of St. Louis or the county of St. Louis, right?
The city of St. Louis.
Okay, how do they get those funds?
The people in the city of St. Louis pay for it.
Okay, got you. So now 33% of the funding comes from the state, right?
It comes from outside sources, the federal government and from the state.
Okay. So just so I understand this, the state and the federal... The state and the federal supplements whatever's generated by the city.
The only way the federal government supplements it is that's mostly in Title I. In Clayton and Brentwood, they don't have much Title I. That's free and reduced lunch. So the federal government don't have no programs up in there. The black kids in Clayton and Brentwood and Clayton and Ladue, they don't have... they don't have to depend on no free and reduced lunch. Look at Ladue, L.A. What's the percentage of local funding does it encompass?
Well, let me find it.
L.A.D.U.E.
I found it. 94.01%.
Kirkwood, where Meacham Park is. You remember Meacham, the one that had the school in the middle of the Mississippi River? What's the group that's in Kirkwood?
92%.
Those black people.
Kirkwood is.
Well, I ain't going to say that Kirkwood is majority black. I'm not going to say that.
Hey, Bianchi, I had a teammate in college, a white dude. He was from Hazelwood, but that's back in the 70s. What's Hazelwood? What is the
Hazelwood is now majority. Hazelwood now is almost majority black in them schools. What's the percentage on Hazelwood?
60%.
60%. Hazelwood
right.
East. Hazelwood Central. Now, Hazelwood West is going further away west. Is the black population in the school is not as much as it is in Hazelwood East, which is damn near 100% black. Because blacks are moving from the city, going east or west. So this damn crap about blacks don't have money to run schools and all that stuff is a bunch of bull crap. That's nothing but some more continuing excuses, talking about what whites don't let you do. Whites left, and blacks are leaving. They ain't going to have their kids in them damn underperforming schools. Why would you? Would you put your child in a inefficient school just because of the color of the skin of the students that's there? I want my kids to be more around blacks. That's a bunch of crazy bull crap. And if it was so, why come it ain't happening? You don't want to talk about it. They don't want to mention it. They don't want to mention that blacks are running from that mess too. You ain't going to change it.
You know
talking
what?
About some hard-headedness. Negroes are bigger racists than whites are. You know why I can say that? Because there ain't no whites around.
I'm not going to let you get away with that. But look, let me say this here, Brother Piyaki. Until I can do my research, I'm going to take your word for it. But now let me give you this. There's something that just don't sit right with me here. Now, look, you've proven your point, and I'll go along with it. You were right. I was wrong. But I'd like to look into those figures. There's something that
so you think the
right.
newspaper, you think the daily newspaper is going to print something that's not accurate and people ain't going to challenge?
Well, you don't want me to go there.
See, this ain't stuff I wouldn't research. This is articles in a daily newspaper, the biggest one in the St. Louis area, the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. The conservative newspaper have went on, the Globe Democrat.
You know what? I'm going to concede the point to you until I can look. Because there's something ain't right here. I don't know what it is, but until I see something and until I can get some information, I'm going to concede the point to you. I'm not like you. If you got something to back up what you're saying, look, if you're right, I'm going to agree with you. If you're wrong, I'm going to disagree with you.
Beasley and Piyaki, we got another caller in at 407-407. Your mic is open.
Gentlemen, I have really been enjoying this conversation. It is so enlightening. And I want to thank you, Piyaki, for answering the question that black people don't understand why they're racist. I've been saying that to black folks that I have conversations with on Facebook, that you are the biggest racist there are. And black people can't be racist. I'm like, yeah, you are, and thank you, Piyaki, because there ain't nobody else around, and they're killing each other and dogging each other. So I just want to say thank you, Piyaki, for confirming what I've been telling people, and maybe they'll believe us now.
L.A. sent Vallada that same articles.
Oh, yeah. Sister Viata, it's nice hearing your voice. I mean, you're a breath of fresh air in the middle of all of these rusty, dusty, grown men.
Thank you.
I just wanted to say, look, you bring a whole lot of common sense to a conversation. But let me say this. Black folks are not racist because if we were racist, we'd be controlling our own space that we occupy. See, racism means that you're practicing the self-preservation and the survival of the fittest. We wouldn't have any food deserts. We'd have our own schools, and we'd have our own businesses to employ our people. So, no. And look,
blacks,
if we
have racist, their own schools.
And look, if we were racist, we'd kill every white person in this damn country if we were racist.
No, that's not. That's them savages that do something like that. Racism is an act.
That's why I refer to white folks as savages.
All right, tell me something that a white person do that makes them a racist. Then that's one thing. One thing.
They control the space they occupy, the government. They control what goes on in their neighborhoods, and they provide.
All right, hang on. Now that's really. What is it that they do that's racist? That's because you control the government don't mean you're racist. That don't because you control the space you occupy, that means you are racist. Racism is an act. Tell me the act of racism that whites do. Give me one or two.
They provide for the safety and the survival of their people.
Well, you supposed to. That's your family. Tell me, name me something that they do. Hang on, L.A. Name me something that they do that's illegal according to the law that you call racist. Give me one or two things.
Racism is not illegal. In fact, that's the only reason black folks are in the shape they're in, because we are not racist.
I'm talking about what's illegal that's considered as racist. Tell me what whites do that's racist, that's illegal.
White folks are not racist. They're racist.
Well, you lie, evade, and deny. Stop lying, evading, and denying. Tell me something. Do they throw rocks at your window? Tell me that. Do they push up you? Tell me that.
Listen, don't white folks control their school districts? You said those white school districts, 95% of their funding.
L.A., read the law. Read the statute again. Who controls the school district?
Oh, no, I said Beasley has a copy of what you sent me. You've got a copy of it now.
Apparently he can't read. Read it again. Who controls the school district, L.A.?
Black folk.
The local district is black controls the school.
The local district, which black. And on top of that, Beasley, you have a household. Does Mr. Charlie control your household?
Nobody controls the. He controls everything outside of my house. He controls the county government. He controls the law. He controls what the businesses. And he controls the funding that comes into this county.
All right, now hold it now. The local, I don't know if you got a mayor, city council. You say there are no black people at all politically involved in the legislation where you live at in the United States, in the county or town?
Because
you do have
enough
black legislators out here.
They only have one county commissioner. One.
On the school list, University City is a black town. The government is black. On that list, Jennings, that's a black town. Yolanda Henderson is the mayor. The government, it only got one out of seven is white on the city commission, on the city council in Jennings. Those black ran areas.
How many black businesses is in that area?
Oh, man. Here we go. You hear that crazy? You know what, Beasley? I'm glad we're having this discussion so you can show your hand. You crazy, man.
Answer the question, how many black businesses in that town?
You are crazy, Beasley. Honest to God, you are.
Well, Beasley, now, in a place where me and Viata's been to a few times, Eatonville, Florida, blacks run that city, including the black businesses, for over 100 years.
Well, I congratulate them, because they're practicing self-preservation and survival of the fittest.
But, in the county that you're in, if you got one black commissioner, that is at least one black person participating in the system. If you're a black voter in that county, you are part of, you might have more people, that don't look like you. But if you're involved with the system, you're involved with the system. And what I sent you from Pianki gave you the percentages based on the neighborhood. It's all there that you can read it. So I can't go along with the white man controls everything. No.
Well, Ferguson. Tell me what 67. Ferguson. Look at the demographics of Ferguson.
Tell me what black folks control in this country, L.A. Tell me what black folks control in this country, locally, statewide.
All right, and I just named Eatonville.
That's just one.
800 or 900. Well, hold it now. There are 19,500 municipalities in the United States. You do have about 800 to 900 of those that are black, like Taft, Oklahoma, which I've said on here several times, the places I've been to, okay, including Eatonville. All right. And with only 70% of the population now, we can't control everything. But
thank you.
It all starts with your own household. Beasley, you can't tell me you don't. Beasley, you run your household. No white man has control over your household.
If a white man
or any man tried to take control of Connie Beasley's household, you got something for him.
Well, you know that, but I'm trying to tell you, Brother Elliot, you got to look. See, you're talking about one individual. I'm talking about right. as a group. As a group, no, you don't control anything in your space.
I sent you several YouTube on elite black communities, especially in Texas. Look at that. Look at the population and look at the percentage of the population that's black. They don't have the crime rate that you have in a Baltimore. These are the percentage of blacks in these cities. That they are higher percentage than whites. They have no crime like you have in Chicago and Baltimore.
I'm not saying you don't have pockets.
And he's going to say that blacks don't control it. Ferguson, Missouri,
67% black. Now, Beasley, me and you know something about Baltimore, Maryland. Okay, in Baltimore, you got blacks who own banks, at least one or two banks in Baltimore. Mondama Mall on the west side of Baltimore. That was, Little Willie. He put that together. And the majority of the city council in Baltimore for decades has been black. I think they got a black mayor there. The majority of the mayors that have been, except for O'Malley and Schaefer, the rest of the mayors that I know about in Baltimore have all been black. And Baltimore has a lot of black entrepreneurs. You and your wife were two of them.
Brother L.A., that city council is controlled by white interest and the mayor. Well, and look, let me give you – the store that I had was a small corner storefront. I'm talking about on a mass, critical mass basis. Blacks didn't control the economy. 95 cents out of every dollar was spent with somebody other than black folk. You got food deserts in Baltimore. That's what I'm talking
about.
L.A., look at this one right here. It's telling you, I just sent you an email. It's these black elite communities. Look at them.
I bet
and
you
some of the population, and some of them, the population is 70% black. So you say that blacks don't control. If they don't, it's because they don't want to. If they're not shopping with blacks, it's because they don't want to.
Okay, Beasley, and you're in North Carolina. I'm sure there's some black elite communities down in your neck of the woods, particularly around Charlotte, Durham, or whatever you. There got to be some black elite communities.
Matter of fact, one of them is Durham. One of those I just sent you is Durham, I think. Check it out.
You know what? I'm going to repeat this again. Maybe I'm not getting through. And just about every city, now those elite communities where my brother is talking about, I asked the question, do they have enough business to support that black population?
It's because maybe they don't want to own businesses. Maybe they're in professions. Maybe they're engineers. Maybe they're chemists. Maybe they're in the government.
They have not invested in the security of their neighborhoods because 95 cents out of every dollar that they make goes outwards. They are not producing jobs for themselves.
Let me ask you something. A person that's running a proprietorship, a shop, they in a very precarious position. You know why? Because you got to depend on that shop for your livelihood to take care of your family life. Therefore, your prices is going to be higher.
Well, you're making my point. You validate my statement.
I'm just telling you reality. You know why come they don't? Because they don't want to. There ain't no money in it.
That's not true. And the thing is this.
It
you said the right
thing.
They don't want to because we're operating as a lone wolf instead of a wolf pack. See, as long as I got mine, we're safe. And the thing is, you're not safe and you're not producing enough.
You come up with all these crazy, silly scenarios, man. You know why they don't want to work as a wolf pack? Because they don't want to.
Exactly. And that puts them in a position.
So now if they don't want to and they not, what in the hell are you talking about?
Well, I'm not getting through, evidently.
You're damn right you ain't getting through because it's impossible what you're talking about.
It's not impossible. I'm just showing you the difference.
It wasn't impossible. Why come, Eric, you continue to talk this stuff? You've been talking about this as if blacks is a separate nation in the United States.
Beasley, you say it's not impossible for us to get together on a collective level?
No, it's not impossible, but the thing is, you got to get rid of the brainwashing. Now, he's telling me there's some elite neighborhoods in these areas. You're right. And you're talking about Edenville, Florida. Those are exceptions.
Right.
But the thing is, I bet you there's no black finance supermarket, a bank, or state banks that's controlled by blacks to support that community. It's not there.
Beasley, all right, the Soviet Union, which was made up of mostly Caucasians, they couldn't keep it together for all that time. So I can't think of any group of people, ethnic-wise, around the globe, in Europe, Russia, Soviet Union, we're tribal. The whole planet's tribal. Not everybody. There's no one particular group that's going to get on the same page, including Jewish people. Not all of them are on the same thing.
You know what the USSR stood for, L.A.? The USSR stood for the Union of Soviet Socialist Republic. And you're absolutely right. They were different. So, Beasley, you are crazy. I'm not saying it in a disparaging way. I'm not trying to be insulted. But this idea that you got is crazy. And the only reason I say it's crazy is because it don't work.
You're right. I am crazy. I'm crazy like a pop. But the thing is, you can't deny. Now, you may not be sophisticated enough to understand it. But what I'm telling you is that all the things socially that black folk suffer from, number one, you said it right, because they don't want to, because they have been trained not to. But the thing
is, they've been trained not. Well, here's the thing. There's nothing stopping them.
Exactly.
So that means they don't want to.
Exactly.
I got to go, man. Somebody else is calling. I'll see you
later. All right, it's 1 o'clock. Man, we're way over time. Thank you all. Everybody have a good rest of the day.